Borjovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KBC, live as per usual from the Sweet James Studios deep behind the orange curtain. Happy Monday. Did everyone make it? Our music almost didn't. So I think it was still sleeping from the weekend. But anyway, we're here. 1-800-222-5222, sam@samnation.com. And do hope that everybody is back and in one piece. What did I do? Oh, I was in San Francisco. I had to check in on one of my favorite places. It's not all a freak show. San Francisco, there's some normal people there too. But a couple of observations. One, it is incredible to me how a totally dysfunctional city can still function. I mean, it's like New York. It's a city that's run completely by liberals. Every social policy that you could possibly dream up of, while high on marijuana and straight from Berkeley, you will see in action in San Francisco. That's one observation. Right, but it still works because there's so much industry there and so many brilliant people and so many great companies that are able to function in spite of the incredible bureaucracy regulation. We have, by the way, we have an office there, a small office. We keep a small office for some skeleton staff up in San Francisco. And the amount of harassment that I get from the city, I mean, every year they send me this enormous tax bill because they estimate all the stuff that I might possibly have in that office and they tax it. You have no idea. You have no idea how crazy a true liberal city can be. So they send me this giant tax bill every year. And I have to go through it and I say, no, I don't have that equipment. I don't have anything that expensive. I just have to go through it. And I fight them. Every year it's a fight. And they want I think it's all of 800 square feet. They want like thousands of dollars. Because you know what? All those giveaways, make no mistake, all those things that they give away and all the services, it all costs money. And where does that money come from? It comes from business. It comes from taxes. It comes from income taxes, fees. And all of this stuff, I'm mystified how a new business can even start there. But apparently it can because people have a will to succeed and they're driven and smart. So it happens in spite of all that. My second observation from San Francisco is that there's no kids in the city. It's the craziest thing. You know, I have three kids and I had my cousins are here from France. So I took them and my daughter, my six-year-old daughter, Vera. So I take Vera there and I sit her down and said, well, first of all, Vera, this is an adult trip. You're going on a grown-up trip. So you're just going to, you know, you're going to hang with us. So, you know, get ready. And she loved it. She likes that, you know, good one-on-one time. But I'm taking her a lot of play. And it's like people don't even know what to do with this kid. They've got a kid there. So they're looking at the kid and all strange. I'm, you know, she took a long nap in the afternoon. Then we took her out to dinner. And after the dinner, we end up in this tiki bar underneath the St. Francis Hotel. Now, this is the hotel that's up on Nob Hill. Very old hotel. And this is a restaurant that opened, I think it opened in 1945. That's how long it's been there. And it's a crazy place. If you haven't been, you've got to check it out. It's this giant tiki bar. And I'm there at, you know, 9:30 at night or 9 o'clock at night with a six-year-old in the tiki bar. And nobody even, you know, nobody even looked at me. Here people would look at you weird because they know that that's not appropriate, that you don't take a child to a tiki bar at 9:30 at night. But in San Francisco, they had no idea that it was people just walking by like, hey, there's a kid. Haven't seen one of those in a while. So San Francisco, great place and a fun weekend away. And today now, all hell breaking loose. If you've missed it, Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, has been fired. CBS reported that he was actually escorted out of the building. He was frog marched right out of the White House. They also reported against CBS that there was a gleeful Sean Spicer giggling in the hallways when the news broke loose. Yeah, Sean Spicy is still hanging out. He's still in the White House. And he's still finishing up some work. Although I don't think that this helps his position or standing any. So Sarah Huckabee Sanders is firmly in place as the press secretary. Spicer isn't coming back, but he was really happy because it was Scaramucci that pushed him out, the one that gave him the heave-ho. So Spicer's celebrating in the hallway. It's a small little vignette. But I say that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is still in charge because she did today answer questions during the White House press briefing about why the mooch was fired. Everybody wanted to know this. And I want to dissect the official White House answer, as she said this many times. But here's just one example of what she said in response to a question. If it was something about the chain of command, or was it that interview? You know, Scaramucci did that interview with The New Yorker last week, a writer, Ryan Leza, and in it, there was a lot of bad language. And here's what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said.
Look, the president certainly felt that Anthony's comments were inappropriate for a person in that position. And he didn't want to burden General Kelly also with that line of succession. As I think we've made clear a few times over the course of the last couple of days to several of you individually, but General Kelly has the full authority to operate within the White House, and all staff will report to him.
And so this is their answer, right? I mean, is it the chain of command? Because you've got General Kelly that got sworn in this morning as the president's second chief of staff. And as soon as he gets sworn in, more or less, I mean, within hours, Scaramucci's out. The mooch gets canned. And so, what you're having, though, is you're having some conflicting messaging here. So because the White House is saying, we want a chain of command, but we think that Anthony's comments were inappropriate. And there's a number of stories like this out there. You're hearing it all over the news. Daily Mail had a piece that titled was, "Did Melania and Ivanka Knife the Mooch Over His Language?" And they take it all apart. Now, I'm here. Okay, I'm going to tell you right now. This is nonsense. It's total nonsense. It has nothing to do with his language in that article. I would bet that Trump loved Scaramucci's language. That Trump enjoyed his colorful way of expressing himself. And there were reports contemporary to that piece being released that following day, I think it was Thursday of last week, reports coming from unnamed sources inside the White House that Trump loved it, that he was enjoying it. It brought a chuckle to him, he enjoyed the fact that Scaramucci was this hard-hitting guy, and he identifies with him. They're both of them are Queens guys. So this sort of brash, outer borough behavior and language was nothing that bothered Trump. Here's what happened. And this is very important to understand because it'll then everything that happens from this point forward here will the pieces will fall into place. Trump really did want to have a change from Priebus to General Kelly. He gave Priebus a chance because Priebus was this consummate insider, best friends with Paul Ryan, and Trump's greatest asset, at least this is how he viewed it at the time that he made the appointment. Trump saw Priebus as his best chance as being able to get things done in Congress. Trump needed an ally in Congress. He needed somebody that would be a legislative liaison and get stuff done on the Hill. And that, of course, Ryan's failed in that department. Didn't happen. He just couldn't deliver Congress for Trump. And if you take that on top of all the leaking and all the backbiting and all the drama, there is simply no upside to keeping Ryan's in the position. So Trump begins at this point to look around, who am I going to put in? And he wants to restore order. It's no mystery. I mean, the guy, he doesn't want the leaks. He wants people, he's sick of all the factions. You know, you've got Bannon people, you've got Kellyanne Conway people, you've had Reince Priebus and his cronies, and these people are all fighting. And the critical mistake, in my view, the critical mistake that Trump made, and he started to make it with Scaramucci, is that he was allowing different people, different positions within the White House, serving in different positions in the White House, and not being in a unified chain of command. This is key. Jared, for example, Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, reports to the president, did not report to Reince Priebus. The same with Bannon. And the same was happening with Scaramucci. In fact, Scaramucci was bragging about it. He was saying, I report directly to the president. I'm going to fire all of you. Now, I liked it. I thought it was funny. And I think Mooch could have been very effective. But it is a problem. And Trump saw in General Kelly somebody who could bring order and restore some confidence in the ranks within the White House. And the way to do that is to unify a chain of command. Now, nobody speaks unified chain of command like a 4-star retired Marine general. That's what Kelly is. And a retired general is not going to tolerate people outside of chain of command. It's just not going to happen. And in that context, it clear as day, Mooch is out. Plain and simple. It had nothing to do with the language. And they're using that to some extent, I think, as window dressing to just add a layer of reasoning for why they terminated him. But in my view, it's simple that Kelly came into the job. This is a job, by the way, that Trump had wanted to offer him sometime back, as early as May. And Kelly at the time said no. Now, with things further in disarray, Kelly had being wanted by the president, right? Trump wanted to have him in that role. And now even more so with everything going on, who has the leverage? Kelly does. He has the power, right? He can negotiate for those terms. It's like when you know, your boss says, hey, I really need you in this new job. And you know that your boss really needs you in that job and doesn't have anybody else. What do? You ask for a crap ton of money, right? Or you ask, well, look, I really need Friday afternoons off. Or you that is when you bring your conditions. And dollars to donuts, as this thing begins to unfold, I promise you that the conditions that Kelly brought, that General Kelly brought to the table were, first and foremost, he wanted to have the power. He did not want to be, as some sources say that he's been telling people, he didn't want to be chief of staff in name only. He wanted to be the chief of staff. And Trump at that point, to get him on board, said, yes, I accept that condition. Now, we don't know this yet. This is my supposition, but I think as days continue, this is what it'll eventually this will get out. And we're going to see that Trump followed through with his promise that he made General Kelly. I actually think that this dismissal of Scaramucci probably wounded Trump deeply. Because I think that the two of them really did get along and were really becoming close. And I think that in a lot of respects, Trump is a loyal guy. And it hurt him to dismiss somebody who had sold his business, right? Sold his business right after the election, hoping for a job, didn't get one. Got kind of shunted over to the Import-Export Bank. Then a guy who in the middle of this, I don't know if you heard this, but Scaramucci got his wife filed for divorce. 9 months pregnant, ends up delivering their child, doesn't even let him see the kid. This is all going on. So I feel for him, and I'm sure Trump does too. But Trump is at a do-or-die place in his presidency. Rasmussen today reported below 40% approval. People don't like this chaos. It does not wear well. And it's not accomplishing the president's agenda. And he has to accomplish his agenda if he wants to get reelected. This is not about being liked. This is about achieving results. And so a guy like Kelly, if he can come in there and restore order, and put the president on a path to being effective, then you will begin to see the president's agenda getting accomplished. And then you're going to begin to, then you'll see a clear path to re-election. And with that hanging in balance, I think that even a friend and an ally and someone to whom Trump felt to a certain extent indebted was sacrificed. And at the end of the day, rightly so. You've got to have, any organization, you need that chain of command. So, well, yeah, I mean, this is it. And now let's see what happens with healthcare. It's very interesting. It's back on the table with some strong threats from the president. I don't know if you've heard about this. I'll talk about this a little more in a minute when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, back behind the Sam Nation microphone. When John Kelly, General John Kelly, was negotiating for the job as the new White House chief of staff, he definitely wanted to have greater latitude than Reince Priebus. And I think this, and it went directly to who would be under his chain of command. I think Trump wanted Kelly and promised him control in order to get him. It was a key point of contention for Kelly. I'll tell you, too, Kelly was, as the Secretary of Homeland Security and an instrumental architect of Trump's very successful immigration campaign, you'll see that Kelly must have seen the dysfunction firsthand, right? I mean, he was looking at it. He was reporting in some respects to Reince Priebus, and then in other respects, he's reporting to Trump. And the bureaucracy of the West Wing, of the White House, of the executive branch of the federal government is vast. And you cannot have multiple people coming directly to the president and having direct relationships with the president. You can't do it. Trump may be used to doing this to some extent in business. But I've found, you know, you get an organization of a certain size and you have to actually turn people away from your office. I'll explain this. Let's say I just had this today. There's a problem with someone on the front lines. But that person has a manager. And I get alerted by someone from the outside, some parties that we do business with, that there's, that they have a concern. Now, I redirect them. And I want to solve it because it's my nature. I want to roll my sleeves up and take care of it. And I can do it in about 2 minutes. But what I did instead was I redirected them to the manager of that person because I don't want to interrupt that chain of command. It's very important. And so my understanding is, and we'll see how this plays out. But I understand that Kelly has been given control over everyone. And that even, I'm told, even involves and includes not just Kushner, but also Ivanka Trump. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Because, of course, when you're the daughter and then you're also an employee, an advisor, that's a role that they're, and it's going to be a role redefinition. Because I imagine that Ivanka Trump at the Trump Organization was used to reporting directly to her father. But they really do have to change it. Normally, and this is critical, people are talking about this now. I've explained this, that the problem with Trump is that he has no background as a politician. He wasn't a governor. He wasn't a lieutenant governor. He wasn't a senator. And this doesn't matter just in terms of sort of political savvy. But where it really matters is he doesn't have an organization of people behind him that he's accumulated over the years through various, through various offices that he's held. You know, if Clinton had been elected president, you know all the Clinton loyalists from Podesta on down. Now, they're crap people, but they're Clinton loyalists. I mean, these are people that will commit felonies for the Clintons. And Trump can't even get people in his White House that'll shut up and not leak to the press. Think about that. Think about the difference. That is literally on the loyalty scale. You should see my arms right now. They're flailing. Am I spitting in the microphone again? My arms are outstretched. I look like Jesus. Because on one end of the loyalty spectrum are the Clinton, you know, felons. And on the other hand, are these guys and gals in the Trump White House who just really don't give a crap and are all in it for personal gain. And the reason is the Clintons have been in the politics game forever. And they've already weeded and sifted through and been left with a core group of supporters who, good or bad, will live, breathe, and think and whatever, are completely in it for the Clinton cause. And that is very difficult to recreate in months' time. So we'll see if General Kelly can do that. All right. Yes, I'm going to talk about healthcare. It's very important. We got John Wolfe up next with the news. Back after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, 800-222-5222, if you want to be on the program, sam@samnation.com. All right, are you suffering because of Obamacare? The answer for many, many, many Americans out there is a resounding yes. Prices have gone up just in some cases, some places, hundreds of percent. Worse yet, in many counties, areas of the country, there are no more insurance companies even offering insurance in the Obamacare exchanges. And the reason is they simply cannot offer the type of insurance that is mandated under the Obamacare law while adhering to the price fix that is also there. So it's just a catch-22. There's no product that can be sold for a reasonable amount of profit in these areas, and so they're bailing on the exchanges. Now today, the president threatened Congress. That is how it was characterized in the mainstream media. He threatened Congress. I saw this somewhere. I think it was the New York Times. And the short basically version of it is this: how dare the president threaten members of Congress? Where does he think he's going to get with this? So of course I had to flip through it and look and see what this was all about. I thought that, you know, surely the president was maybe running through, I don't know, the Senate chamber with the machete, the way this thing was written. Well, no, not exactly. It wasn't a machete, so to speak, although metaphorically one could say it was a machete. The president threatened to kill the subsidies provided to members of Congress that allows them to have the kind of Cadillac health insurance that most Americans would find simply unattainable. Now, this, by the way, is one of the great, now I think fairly well known, but dirty, dirty, dirty secrets of Obamacare. In order to get Congress on board, Obama gave them a little backdoor goody-goody. And what was it? He used the Office of Personnel Management, okay, which is basically a government agency that handles all federal employees, to reclassify Congress as, now hold, wait for this, to reclassify Congress as a small business. Did you know this? Yeah, they made Congress a small business, which allows it to now exist in its own little world, and then they gave an enormous amount of subsidies. This is a bribe. That's what I think this is. Obama literally bribed Congress. You think that your congressman would have voted for this BS bill if it had affected him or her the way it's affected you and me? No way in H-E double hockey sticks would that have happened. Folks, this is brazen. It was brazen. It still is. And so what is Trump? God love him. Trump is saying, hey, you losers in Congress, you want to know what I think of your, you know, you absolutely insane decision to not vote for a repeal, even though you've promised to vote for it again and again and again for years? You know what I think of you, John McCain? And you, Lisa Murkowski, for voting against my, I'm going to take away your subsidy. Now, the Los Angeles Times ran a big piece of 12 or 13 pages about, can he really do this? Can Trump really do this? And it went back and forth. Now, I'm going to tell you yes, he can, because Obama did this through executive action. It wasn't legislated, meaning this Office of Personnel Management is controlled by whom? The president. So Trump can unilaterally do it. He can just pull it, cut up their credit card. Will this threat work out? I'll break it down to you, for you politically. I think politically it's problematic, and I'll explain why when we come back. Sam Rogowski, right after this.
Talk Radio.
KABC.
Sam Rogowski. You know, I was in the Czech Republic a couple weeks back. And one of the interesting things I found out there dealing with some lawyer stuff. Now, I'm a lawyer, in case you don't remember that. And I was talking to somebody about a colleague of mine there. And I said, I needed to go through some business things. And apparently I found out they have this crazy rule, which is that if you are represented in the Czech Republic by a lawyer, another lawyer cannot talk to you about the case that you have under any circumstances. In other words, you cannot get a second opinion from a different attorney. My jaw almost dropped to the ground because I immediately thought of Sweet James. How many people come to him for a second opinion where they have an attorney working on their case and they have some concerns or there's something that just doesn't seem right? Doesn't feel right. And they call Sweet James. They reach out to him and say, hey, is my lawyer doing everything right? Now, sometimes he'll say, yeah, sure, everything looks good. And, you know, stick with what you've got. It looks like it's working. But a lot of times he'll say, no, it's not. Here, I can do this better. So look, if you've got a case that's going on, if you have a personal injury matter, been hurt, you got a lawyer on it already, you know, it never hurts to get a second opinion. Imagine a world where you weren't allowed to consult with a different doctor about the same problem. How crazy is that? We here have freedom. It's America. So we can talk to different attorneys and get that very important outside perspective. And James will do that for you. And if you don't have a lawyer and need one, of course, get the right lawyer right from the start. Make that attorney Sweet James Bergner, the lawyer that we trust here on the program. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit Sweet James's website, which happens to be sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski back behind the Sam Nation microphone here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. So the Office of Personnel Management, remember that little mouthful. It's going to be in the news a whole bunch in the weeks ahead, because Trump, in threatening to kill Congress's posh healthcare, is going to use the OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, to do it. Trump can undo what Obama did, because Obama did not get the special deal for Congress through legislation. There was not a law passed. He did it through executive action. So now the question is going to be, is this an effective threat? Now, I think that when you're when you're dealing with Congress, by the way, first, I believe that Trump would do it. I actually think he would. I think Trump is absolutely dead furious with Congress and politically understands that the congressional approval, Americans loathe Congress more than they loathe Trump. I mean, that's a fact. So I don't think there's a lot of downside there. The risk that Trump that he has is it might be an effective threat, but if he carries through with it, I mean, he just further alienates a Congress that he needs. He needs to start, you know, building more bridges. And I think there's a potential of a backfire here. But I think they're serious. Mick Mulvaney, the director of the budget here, this is what he said today on State of the Union with Jake Tapper on CNN.
And what he's saying is, look, if Obamacare is hurting people, and it is, then why shouldn't it hurt insurance companies and, more importantly, perhaps for this discussion, members of Congress? There is a certain benefit that members of Congress get as part of an OPM decision from a couple years ago. And I think the president's simply looking at this and going, is this fair?
And you know what? Here is what I think politically for the president is this message is going to sell. It's not necessarily carrying through with the threat. But I think that Americans who are suffering as a result of healthcare really, really, really do not like the fact that Congress has this special little carve out for themselves. And Trump threatening to take away Congress's little carve out, taking away this little bonus deal that they got, really, it's blood money from the president to go along with the original Obamacare deal. I think this plays well. So it's all in how it's handled. And this, again, is where it's really important to have a White House that's focused and on message. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back right after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, I wonder what it's like if you're in Congress and you got the president threatening to take away your posh health care. Think about that. I bet they're getting nervous like squirrels. I heard actually that they've began this memos are starting to circulate warning staffers, because by the way, this isn't just for congressmen and women or for senators. It's also for their staff. Remember, this exception was they reclassified Congress as a small business. What a joke that is. So at any rate, they're freaking out. There's memos going back and forth. Your health care might end. Trump is serious. And I think, of course, they're not happy about it. Yeah, of course they don't like it one bit. Look at McCain. This is not going to be a mean-spirited discussion about his tumor. But to the best of my knowledge, McCain is not getting treated at the VA for his tumor. This is my biggest problem with government in general, is that politicians make one set of rules for us, for you and me, and then they live an insulated, protected lifestyle as members of an elite ruling class. When I was younger, this going back into the late 80s, no, early 90s. Yeah, after 92, 93, 94, I remember midnight basketball. Now, if you're older, you remember what this was. Remember midnight basketball? This was being pushed by Clinton. It was this thing about inner city youths being out there and playing midnight basketball to help keep them away from a life of crime. It's really actually racist. I mean, to me, it sounds like Clinton was saying, I don't want to even go there, but you get what I'm saying. And I remember sitting at my dining room table with my dad and mom, and my dad saying something to the effect of, well, shoot, I bet Clinton's daughter, Chelsea, yeah, what's she doing at night? What's Al Gore's kids doing at night? They're at home. Their butts are in a seat and they're studying. They're doing homework. And so, you know, the idea of midnight basketball or the idea of of public schools that are run entirely by unionized, care-nothing, do-nothing teachers. Meanwhile, politicians that set the rules, put their kids in private schools, top private schools, and have their kids with tutors at home under lock and key. It's just, it's part of this double standard. And it is absolutely inconceivable to me that, Congress feels no, what's the word? They feel no fire underneath them to take care of this. If Congress had the same problem with health care that so many Americans out there have, don't you think that there might be a little more like, let's get this thing done? Instead, at every turn, I don't even know. I never was aware of all the congressional vacations that take place. But they're always leaving. And here we want to get stuff done. And you know why? Because they're more intent on screwing Trump than they are about taking care of the American people. And this will end up being just one more example of Trump derangement syndrome, right? Where people are so intent on getting Trump back or punishing Trump that they end up veering off into crazy land. So we'll follow this and keep a tab on it. Hey, we're hours up again. Shoot. Well, I'll be back tomorrow night at 7. Don't forget, tune in. See you then. Bye.
Talk radio. 790.
KABC.